Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Hollywood Podcast, covering the latest in film, TV, streaming, and social media. I'm your host, Max Geschwind. Stay tuned for today's episode. Well, I'm so excited to be joined by Oscar and Emmy-nominated costume designer Danny Glicker, whose previous credits include Transamerica, Milk, Up in the Air, This is the End, Love and Mercy, Mother, Bad Times at the El Royale, Ghostbusters Afterlife, and The Whale. He's now out with his latest project, HBO's new historical spy thriller dark comedy series, The Sympathizer. The series is based on the true story of The Captain, a North Vietnam plant in the South Vietnam Army, who's forced to flee the U.S. with his general near the end of the Vietnam War. While living within a community of South Vietnamese refugees, he continues to secretly spy on the community and report back to the Viet Cong, struggling between his original loyalties and his new life. Danny, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So I'd love to start sort of before you even got involved with The Sympathizer. How involved or how familiar were you with the novel? And did you find yourself needing to read and study the book to help inform your own costuming work?
I was familiar only in title until they reached out to me. And then I immediately used the novel as the kind of the ultimate guide. It was really, it was my guiding light for the whole project. I essentially read it back to back around three times, not in one sitting, because it's a really, you know, substantial piece of exquisite literature. But I read it and then I went back and then the second time I read it, I was really dissecting it. And I went through the novel and I basically dissected it. I decoded it. I isolated every description that either had a historical precedent or a visual description. And I kind of created this whole separate document where I footnoted all of them to then provide backup for my own research. And so I had this sort of novel length Bible of the novel, where I then kind of created a footnote, visual footnotes, and then that kind of became my guiding source for my visual Bibles. So the novel was always first and foremost, and not just the kind of factual technical things, but definitely trying to imbue my research with the tone of the novel as well, because The Sympathizer is such an exquisitely sardonic book, and I wanted to make sure that my research had that nuance as well.
One of the show's directors and showrunners is the iconic and perhaps one of the most legendary directors around today in Korean cinema, and that's Park Chan-wook, who most recently directed Decision to Leave. Can you share what it was like working with him?
I mean, you know, it was heaven working with director Park Chan-wook. He is a director that I have admired for years, as he is one of the great filmmakers of all time. And in particular, to me, what I respond to is he creates these deeply emotional worlds that are expressed and unlocked and sort of spun the tale through his incredible visuals. And I was so excited to work with him because I knew that this was an opportunity to tell a story that worked on these different dimensions. It works on the kind of profoundly brilliant framework of the novel. But then I knew that we were adding the added element of this kind of visual paradox that was always going to work either in towards telling the story or in contrast to the story, depending on the needs of our deeply unreliable narrator at any given moment.
I have to talk about working with Robert Downey Jr. This certainly, I would assume, would be a first for you, if not, correct me if I'm wrong, but to design costuming for a singular actor who is playing several different roles, must have been a unique challenge for you. Can you talk about what it was like, not only working with him as an actor, but and a producer, which he is on the show, but also needing to develop these several different character looks for one body?
It was, you know, I have to start by saying Robert Downey Jr. is incredibly bright and inventive. And so it was a joy to work with him, because I think he approached each of these characters with a real bold sensibility and a real commitment to the uniqueness of every character, but just as importantly, the fact that all of these men who individually and then together represent this kind of Western imperialist archetype of these various institutions, there was a very kind of foxy, cagey exploration of how are these men different, and then how do we make sure that on some level they always carry the same DNA? And, you know, the DNA in those men is the kind of soul that Robert imbued in all of them. And the visual that we, working with the brilliant makeup artist Vincent Van Dyke, worked really hard not to totally obscure. There's a visual idea that we're deeply committed to, which is that every time you see these guys, they look completely different than the last time. They look totally different than the last guy, but they also look vaguely familiar. And that was a very important idea for the psychology of the show. But then the physical part was honestly a joy. I think as a costume designer, you know, the pleasure of my job is to walk into the fitting room with one actor and then at some point walk out with a fully different character. And I think for me, the challenge was I got to do that with one actor and four characters, some of whom appear in scenes together, all of which appear together at some point or another. And so the ways in which they appear was super important. And I know that we worked a lot on the physicality. That was kind of, you know, the point of genesis for all of the characters, was just what makes them different. And I know we started with a different body for all of them, and we played with shoulders and bellies and heights and biceps, and, you know, they each had a different body, and that to me was super fun.
I have to talk about the captain, who's played by this outstanding breakout actor that I think we're going to be hearing about a lot moving forward, who's Hoa Swande. This character, being a communist spy for the North, needs to go undercover as this preppy 60s college student. Can you share where your research came from in developing these period Ivy League student styles?
Yeah, there was a lot of question about, you know, even kind of going back to the RDJ characters, what are the images within the American institution that garner trust and respect? And for a character such as the captain, who has in his own life experienced an enormous amount of prejudice, and it's a major part of his character's life story, I wanted to really toy with the idea of like the sort of the key in American society. And in particular, you know, he's really, and it's the same in the book, but he's really playing with this kind of collegiate, upwardly mobile. He's essentially presenting to the world that his goal is to be part of the patriarchy. He's trying to become the system. And that, of course, would engender an enormous amount of trust and comfort within the kind of like infrastructure of the patriarchy. They would see a guy who wants to be them. And so I was having a lot of fun because he is wearing, and then it's sort of established in the second episode, a lot of hand-me-downs that have been given to him by the professor. So they would be from probably, you know, they'd be older clothes, probably from the 60s. And then I was really playing with the idea of, the book Take Ivy was deeply instrumental. There was definitely a very strong through line of the kind of heartthrobby Ryan O'Neill in love story. And then there was a really powerful image of Steve McQueen in this baby blue shirt with khaki pants holding a gun. And I thought to myself, that says it all, right? There's like the softness of the collegiate vibe, but someone who's deeply dangerous, who presents as the patriarchy, but who has a much more dangerous element to him. And it was really about kind of, as with so many of the characters, figuring out how to hide in plain sight.
I'm glad you mentioned blue, because I know that your visual approach was definitely rooted in color, and the captain being rooted in the color blue. Can you walk me more through that in having color serve as the basis for many of these characters?
I think that the color story for the whole movie is very, very much an extension of director Park Chan-wook's highly specific and deeply exquisite command of color theory. And I would be reluctant to talk too much about the meaning of the color, only because in a weird way, I think it's almost like it has to just sort of, it has to be visually experienced and just sort of felt in your soul. But I did have a lot of conversations with director Park about color. And going into this, I think the first thing that I knew I needed to just fully commit to and was so excited to commit to was to follow director Park down the path of his color story. And I knew that, you know, I could provide the shapes and I could provide the historical texture and I could provide the patterns and the tones, but it was director Park who I think really needed to dictate the color, because he is truly an auteur in that he sees the whole image all at once. And so I knew that his command of even just the way that your eye is going to move around the screen was rooted in color. And I knew that I was providing a piece of his visual complete puzzle. So a lot of the colors were through a very close collaboration. One of the things that I really love about the blue is it's a very truthful color, but it so heightens the piece that I think it takes our suspension of disbelief, our kind of our empathy and our soul to a higher level when we're watching it. It allows us to experience things in a slightly more exciting and somewhat operatic level, because we're not only watching events as they unfold, that we're watching events as described by the captain, we're watching events as described by the captain as he recalls them through his emotional filter. So I love the idea that we would use color in service of creating an emotional experience. And I think that there's so few directors. I mean, I think when you think of that level of color theory, you have, you know, director Park Chan-wook, and you have Almodovar. And I mean, that's it. Those are the people who can tell a story with color that way.
I want to talk a bit about this time period and its significance to you, honestly, in your work. So much of your work is set in this time period of the 70s. Granted that every 70s project you've, you know, worked on, it's in a totally different stories in different places throughout the world. But is there something specific about this time period that always gravitates you to it?
You know, I've asked myself that question a lot, and I am so drawn to stories that take place in the 70s. And I keep kind of like putting myself under the light, trying to figure out what is it about this period that keeps drawing me back. And it is such a tumultuous period. And I think that you're seeing so much happening in the world. I find it to be fascinating, because every time I've done a 70s project, I've never felt like I was having to repeat myself. I almost would view the 70s at this point as the way that someone who does contemporary projects exclusively, you can do nothing but contemporary projects, and each project is going to be totally rich and unique, specific to our era right now. But each project is going to have its own language, and each character is going to have their own heartbeat, their own soul. What I do love about the 70s is, it sucks for the characters, but it's great for storytelling, which is the world was in a lot of pain, turmoil, and transition. And by pain, I mean the pain of growth, right? There's the pain of transition. The world was moving really quickly. And I think that really shows itself in the fact that you see very conservative people, and in this case, for instance, our congressman, in like the widest lapels and the widest ties. And you have to remind yourself that 10 years ago, they were in the thinnest ties and the narrowest lapels. And so you have to say to yourself, what has happened in the world that has gone so quickly that the institutions, the conservative institutions, have been moving this rapidly? And I think obviously a lot of it has to do with, as they say, with the war in Vietnam, you know, that I think the television had moved things really quickly. I think that the mass visuals have moved things really quickly, culturally and socially. But I love working with these characters who are in a culture that's moving slightly faster than they feel comfortable with. And I think that for me always creates dynamic characters, because they're always kind of like breathlessly trying to keep up. And that, of course, is like, you know, I'm always trying to figure out whenever I design a character, what's causing them pain or discomfort? Like what in the world is hard for them? And that's the thing that you either design towards or against, right? And so are they reactionary or are they flexible? Are they malleable? And so, I mean, the 70s has it all.
And speaking of the 70s, as we close out, I have to ask you about an upcoming project that I know is so anticipated, that so many of us are looking forward to. Your next Jason Reitman collaboration, and that is SNL 1975, about the beginnings of Saturday Night Live leading up to its premiere in 1975. Can you share with us anything you can on what we have to look forward to from your 70s period costuming work, but in the sphere of American television and specifically this iconic one and the beginnings of it?
I'm not able to share very much about it. I can tell you wholeheartedly that I match your excitement for this project. It has been a dream world to be a part of. I love going to work every day. But it's also very melancholy for me, because I am in the same year as the characters from The Sympathizer come to California, right? I'm doing this project right now that takes place in 1975. And I keep thinking of, you know, the scrappy, brilliant group of people in New York who are thinking of changing the face of comedy, right? Changing the face of entertainment. And that for them is life or death. But then I'm thinking across the country of my characters from The Sympathizer, and their lives really are life and death. They watched everything that they love fall apart. They watched a community that they cared about get destroyed against their will. And it's like, and it's sort of a rich experience for me, because I'm in this like incredible playground for Saturday Night Live right now, but The Sympathizer is so kind of deep in my heart, and my experience working with those beautifully drawn characters is so deep in my heart that I can't help but see these two worlds as coexisting, even though they're so different. And so it's very bittersweet for me, but I really feel like when I started Saturday Night Live, 1975, I kind of was like, I cannot believe I'm going back into the same year. But in many ways, I feel like I'm learning so much about exploring the psychology of people on the other side of the country who are dealing with a much different struggle than the ones I just spent such an enormous amount of my time and my soul with.
Exactly. As you said, it's the same year, but just so much more life and death considering the project you just came off of versus the one you're currently working on now.
Yes.
Is filming still underway or have you wrapped?
Yes. Yeah, we're in the tail end of filming right now. And I wish I can say more, but I hope that my voice can express like the level of joy that I have been feeling about this job.
Yes. And such a talented, unbelievable cast that Jason was able to assemble with Dylan O'Brien, Finn Wolfhard, Willem Dafoe, J.K. Simmons, Rachel Sennett. I mean, the list goes on. So exciting.
And that's all the brilliance of Jason. He has, you know, extraordinary taste. This is a real passion project. And I think the excitement that you're expressing is felt by me and everyone here.
Yeah. Well, congratulations again on The Sympathizer. The first couple episodes we've all had a chance to watch so far, and we're looking forward as the spring goes on to see how this story continues. And I know you're working on it now, but looking forward to what you have next with SNL set 1975, which looks like it's going to be coinciding with the show's 50th anniversary, coincidentally enough. So that's cool.
It is cool. I can't wait for you to continue watching The Sympathizer because I think the screws are only going to get tighter. Yes, that's all I could say about that.
Amazing. Well, I'm Danny. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was such a pleasure to meet you.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Please take a moment to subscribe to The Hollywood Podcast for free on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Until next time, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter @Max Geschwind. Thanks for listening.